Okay, call to order. If we can have the roll call.
Yeah, that's me. Hang on. I have too many tabs. Okay, I'm ready. Francois Adam.
Here.
Olivia Branch.
Here.
Andrea Copeland.
Here.
Russ Cromberg. Joaquin Eastwood.
Here.
Chris Engel.
Here.
Emily Kilroy.
Here.
Eva Pisto Fritley.
Here.
Jennifer Lyon. Jit Falafelwong.
Here.
Amber Smith.
Here.
Brad Buell. Juanita Wade. Bernie.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Now we're going to have an industry presentation. Greer Achenbach, Friends of Charlottesville, downtown.
Where do you want me?
Stand
over here.
Yeah, and I'll forward the slides as you asked me to.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Where can I see you? I know a number of you in this room, but for those of you who don't, my name's Greer. I'm the ED at Friends of Seaville downtown. And 2026 is the 50th anniversary of the downtown mall. Yay. If you did not know, it was a project that coincided with the bicentennial. So,
good.
So the 50th anniversary is the perfect opportunity to focus a lot of the work that we're doing downtown. It's an opportunity to enliven and promote the downtown mall, which has struggled from a public relations and branding perspective over the last 5 to 10 years. The next couple of slides sort of outline what we're doing with the Meet Me Downtown campaign. So the first element we're doing here with the 50th anniversary campaign is about storytelling. We want to reclaim the narrative around downtown Charlottesville, which has really suffered, has become known for what happened in 2017, and also reconnect the local community with the center of town. It is such an exceptionally unique asset, and we want people coming back downtown and having good feelings and attitudes about this incredible space. So we're doing a ton of different things in that storytelling space. We're working on a podcast interviewing kind of local celebrities about why they choose Charlottesville and talk. Hi.
Hi, Brad.
So the intention is that people are kind of tuning in to hear from these people, but stop selling Charlottesville and why it's so special and important through that. We're working on a series of national stories that we're aiming to place in national publications so that people are seeing all of the amazing things, architecture, history, music, art, and culture. There really is so much within 8 blocks. So we have world-class entertainment and dining and local shops. So trying to get that story out there. We're also working on local stories with Seaville Weekly. So there's a lot of really exciting things happening downtown that you all maybe are in the know because you're in this room, but there's probably still things that you don't know. Hopefully you know things like Block by Block Ambassador Program that's starting in February, which we're very excited about. But the city's doing a lot. I always want to say that. The city really is putting a lot of effort into the mall right now ahead of the 50th, and we want to make sure that we're sharing that story as well. And then, of course, social media. So people are always on their phones. We want to make sure that we're doing a good job of meeting people there as well. We've been working on a lot of business spotlights, just doing videos about the local businesses downtown. Those businesses often don't have marketing budgets or experience in marketing to market themselves there. So equally big piece here is we're working on a branding campaign for downtown Charlottesville. As far as I know, this is something that has not been done in the past, that there would be a cohesive brand for the entire entity. So here's the new logo right here. Here's the color palette, an example of what it looks like on merch. And there's a couple of different versions. Some right here says the 50th, so we'll be using that throughout 2026 and probably a little bit on each end and trying to maximize how much leverage we can get out of the anniversary. We worked with Martimont Design. It's really fantastic. We also produced a commercial, which I will happy to share with you all via email after this. It's really great. So right now I'm looking to place that short commercial around town and nationally. And it makes them all look incredible and fun and like it has something for everybody. But it also links to our website, downtownseaville.com. The intention is that that will be everywhere, both the video and print advertisements with that website, so that we're constantly driving people to... Hi.
Sorry, girl.
Hi there. So that we're constantly driving people to that website, that becomes our product. And if you go to that website, you'll see that there is both an events calendar, which calendar is a problem we can talk about separately, as well as an interactive business map where you can filter by things like dining or shopping or lodging, all kinds of different things. But we want to be driving people there and then ultimately driving them downtown where they can take advantage of particularly our arts community, which I really think is downtown's competitive advantage. So huge marketing and branding campaign that goes along with the storytelling. And then the other piece of this is labeled experiencing, but the intention is to invite people back downtown. So we are producing a lantern parade on July the 3rd, which is the 50th anniversary of the mall. Really excited about it because it's something that's participatory and can showcase the arts community, which I just mentioned. They're very excited about helping us make these lanterns and inviting students and families. I think it will probably end with a light show, but a great community event that we're really looking forward to on July the 3rd. I'd also like to do something at the end of the 50th anniversary year. We're talking about a longest table fundraiser, which I don't have a lot of details on that yet, but there's opportunity for those sorts of experiential events. We will also be doing a series of salon dinners, inviting people back downtown. I'm not an event producer. We just have two people on our staff, and it is not my intention to be adding more events that we are producing because there's so much already happening. So that's why I started this with storytelling and branding, because the arts, there's so many incredible things, whether it's at the Paramount or Live Arts or the Jefferson, and our role is really connecting people and place and bringing those people back downtown. So I flipped this because when I was sending this out, people were telling me that I needed to get to my ask really quickly. But for those of you who aren't as familiar with Friends of Seaville Downtown, we exist to connect people and place. We want to reinforce the idea that everybody is welcome in downtown Charlottesville. We advocate for the community and aim to invite people to have connections downtown. So some of the advocacy things we're particularly excited about, I mentioned the Clean and Safe Ambassadors, which are coming downtown in February the 1st, as far as I know. The city has invested in some deferred mall maintenance that's very exciting this year ahead of the 50th anniversary celebration. And then we're optimistic about the potential of the low barrier shelter. Friends of Charlottesville steps in when it doesn't make sense for the city to fund something or to produce something, and we can bring in private philanthropy to do that. So some examples are we've installed holiday lights, a lot of them last year. You've probably seen the big Seaville sign and the uplights. We've installed 47 free security cameras, of which we have access to all of them and can work with the police if they need access to help solve a crime. We've done some murals, public art and flowers, open bathrooms in New York Place, a lot of beautification and safety projects. And then just like I talked about with experiential, our intention is to invite people back downtown. So we do a couple of things ourselves that you might be familiar with, like the Elgin Seaville scavenger hunt or the downtown express train. But our intention really is to be telling the story of the great things that are already happening downtown. And that's our staff. Can I answer any questions for you about the Downtown Mall's 50th anniversary? Or the mall in general?
I always have a question, it seems. Mm-hmm. The stores there are like the restaurants and everything, places that have closed. Is the city doing anything to encourage those being open or someone who wants to put in another restaurant or business or something?
So that's not an area I have worked in a lot. I would love for Friends of Seaville to do more work, move more into that economic development space. We are looking at some of those windows and then just what we can do from a beautification standpoint. Certain Speedy's got quotes from me right now with, can we put the new logo in it and have the new Downtown Seaville website? And really using that as a marketing and branding opportunity in the interim until they're filled.
I just want to chime in. What I've heard is that, you know, the issues with unhoused on the mall and their worldly possessions that are kind of out there in different places. We've heard about the security. It seems like just like the corner after midnight and 1 a.m., it's like a different world, you know, different things come, you know, happen. And so we definitely, because I was doing bell ringing on Friday, and I've seen police presence, more police presence out there. And of course, we have an ambassadors out there. So we've heard it as counselors, and we're definitely trying to address it. We just can't do some things just like overnight.
Right.
And so. But yeah. It's we know that the mall is a gem, that it's unique in that, you know, it's the largest, or if not one of the largest, and so we want to take care of it, and so I'm committed to, in my position, to do everything I can to preserve it and promote it. So glad Greer and I, we work closely together, and I know many of the business owners and many of them contact me directly when they have an issue. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. I can add in the actual vacancy rate on the mall is quite low. It's right around 5% right now.
Okay.
It has been a little higher in the past, but it's about 5 right now, which is not alarming. There are places that are more regularly vacant, and it kind of sticks in your mind as, oh, there's some vacancies there. But 5% as a vacancy figure is really not too alarming. Most shopping centers would have something similar.
Okay.
Our Office of Economic Development, works with folks to connect to empty spaces on a regular basis. So we're always trying to make those connections. However, we don't do the deal. It's between the private business owner and the landlord to kind of agree on a rate and a concept that works. We're always trying to encourage that to work because we want vibrancy, we want activity. But that ultimately is a business deal. Mm-hmm.
And I commend you for anything that's a vacant space or something, and putting up, you know, the posters or whatever, advertising for Seaville. I think that's brilliant, frankly.
I agree. It's those small things that actually do make a big difference. I also didn't mention it, but we have a campaign. We're redoing some of our storefront windows for the 50th. We have a grant to do some of our tools in Timber Lakes and some of the businesses that have been around for the longest amount of time.
Is there an update on the Landmark Hotel? That seems to still be a big eyesore on the mall.
I'm really putting Chris in the mayor of the spot here.
I'll just quickly chime in on that. That it was about, I think, January of this year, that the property kind of officially went on the market by the property owner. And so that allowed, you know, investors or purchasers to kind of go in to, you know, tap on the concrete to see if it was, you know, if it had to be, essential had to be torn down, or if it was still good. And it's my understanding that different engineers and things to look at it and said that the building itself is fine. I actually did a tour of it with the real estate marketers, and they're from Richmond, and I mean, if you want to see like something stopped in time, they have what is this, drywall in? I mean, it was ready to be put together, and of course, all of those things have to go, the AC units and all of those things, but the shell of the building is my understanding is still good, and you know, part of this is, you know, you have to kind of take with a grain of salt with marketers that they have some potential buyers, but it's so much uncertainty with the construction development, with tariffs and things like that. And so until that's settled, this is what I'm told, it's like they're reluctant to kind of, not knowing what the final costs and things are going to be, because someone could wake up tomorrow morning with the authority and say, you know what, we're going to have 25% tariffs on this and that. And so it's, you know, it's not good in that market right now for a big project like that.
The mayor's correct. There was a flurry of activity late last year, early this year. A number of people looked at it. There were some offers traded, but nothing materialized. They took it off the market over the summer. They're going to reinitialize marketing again early next year, maybe hope for better results.
Okay. And just as a commercial building, or is it going to be like office, or?
To be determined by the ultimate buyer, but the folks that were looking at it were by and large looking at it as a hotel.
Yeah. The view on the top floor is amazing. Even with concrete, you know, I imagine a restaurant or something up there. It really, it's, think of the 323, that view that you have up there is very similar to that wonderful view. So, yeah.
But currently, it's not the oldest abandoned hotel in the region.
What is?
Oh.
The one on after that one.
Yeah, so we don't have that.
Fun fact.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
We should get t-shirts.
Any other questions?
That place has a great view, too.
I see a real connection between the downtown mall and the wineries, and people come in to experience both. And so I'm just wondering, are there ways for the wineries to partner and help with the 50th on the downtown mall with some of these salon dinners? Or
I'm so glad you said that. I agree, and we haven't really thought about the wine industry as partners before, but I do think a lot of people come for a trip to go to vineyards, and then the second choice is to come. The second stop is to come down to the mall. I would love to talk with you more about that, to talk with Courtney about some ideas. I know you've had some good ideas about that in the past that we just haven't run with, but
okay.
I would love to talk to you.
I'd love to help with that.
And I'm assuming you're with Eastwood, which I also love.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. We'll talk more about it.
All right.
Greer, you mentioned a calendar briefly and said maybe talk more about it. Did you want, is there any input that this group could help?
Maybe. So obviously the biggest goal for us is to promote what's already happening downtown. Everybody used to be on Scene Think, which is no more. So now there's like at least 7 calendars where people are posting events, and our small nonprofits and our small businesses do not have the resources to do that. They don't know about all of them. So we're trying to figure out that problem, and it might just be me finding an intern that says, go through every organization's events and put them on all the calendars, but I would love to find a better solution to that.
Anything else? And I'm just going to give another plug. Anything outdoor restaurants are really, really popular, especially this is going to be during the summer, spring, fall. Yeah.
I know you said you don't have the capacity to lead the events. So I guess that would probably fall in the city if there was an event down there.
Depends what the event is, and so I should say that I don't necessarily want to take on producing another Tom Tom, for example.
Yeah.
We are in charge of the 50th anniversary celebration in July, and then we do a lot of other stuff that you may or may not be familiar with, which is sort of like event marketing, and we have the train every week, we do the scavenger hunts, we just did actually 1,200 people at Pictures for Santa at the Paramount a couple weeks ago. I think we could develop some partnerships. Like I mentioned, I'd really like to do a longest table. I think that would be a really neat outdoor event.
I just think from experience, tying something like this, like a kickoff of a initiative and branding, ties in really well with an event and gets everyone excited at the same time. to really help. It kicks it off, but really to get people more excited about that and an experience that they have in that place is what is going to bring them back to that space. It's the experience they feel and their families feel. And so if there's a way to somehow create that while launching this at the same time, you get to make the ask in that period of time when they're experiencing this wonderful feeling, and then they're definitely more likely to come back and enjoy that.
So we are, and I'll be sure to share more details, we are doing the Lantern Parade and a light show on the 3rd, and there will be merch, and there will be lots of free ice cream and those sorts of things. That's important to the city manager, that there be that moment. So it is July 3rd, because that's when the mall opened, which is maybe not the best time. But we agree. I mean, I think you have to invite people down. It's more than just putting ads in the newspaper.
Any other questions? Greer, thank you very much.
Thank you for
having me. And you're going to send us the slides so that we know how to get in contact with you if anyone has any other suggestions. Or they can just contact the mayor.
Yeah.
I would be happy to. Thank you all so much for having me.
Thank you.
Okay. Next we have the consent agenda. I don't think we need... Lauren, do we, do you want us to have a roll call on this, or just for, can we do it for all three?
The only thing that I was going to ask is, okay. I went back and looked at the bylaws, and last time we did it, we did by roll call, not on the consent agenda, so
okay.
We can pull the bylaws off and do just a roll call vote on the bylaws, so we can stay consistent with what we did last time.
Okay, we'll skip to the bylaws, and do I have a motion to approve the bylaws?
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so move. You want a roll call on that?
I did, but I think you can probably, there's only two people absent, so I think you can probably mark the sheet accordingly.
Good. Okay. So we have approval of previous minutes and the financial statement. Do I have a motion to approve those?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The enthusiasm is
yeah.
You can cut it with a knife. Enthusiasm. All opposed? Okay, so moved. The next one, we have discussion proposed resolution to request that Virginia Tourism Corporation recognize Go Virginia Region 9 as a tourism region. If you all read this, and any questions? If not, I will entertain a motion.
I have one question.
Yes.
Which is just, it all sounds great. How, and so it sounds like, as opposed to the budget for the VTR, including Richmond and focusing on all these things, that we'll have our own budget under this new, no.
So it's not necessarily a budget consideration. It's how Virginia Tourism Corporation talks about its regions. And so right now they're putting out a state tourism plan. I feel like I'm talking to the back of Olivia's head because I am. They're putting out they're finalizing a state tourism plan right now. You'll see in that state tourism plan that we're part of the region with Richmond, and all the way down to Danville. It's a huge Central Virginia region, and they're going to tell you that conferences are doing really, really well in Central Virginia region, because Richmond region and their only convention center that we have in the region is doing well. But that isn't indicative of our region. And so this conversation's been happening a while, especially since the Go Virginia regions have been such a successful economic development partnership for the region. And Chris and Emily could speak more to that than I could. But this helps us differentiate ourselves when they do research, so that if the research is more applicable to us. Mm-hmm. It also makes our destination, in my opinion, the premier destination in that part of the the region for what we are calling the Piedmont region.
It doesn't increase our marketing spend at all. It doesn't give you some more money.
No, but it could be a lot of local government money has to come from a plan that happens at the state or federal level, right, or some kind of regional plan. So when it's in the state tourism plan, we can go, oh, you know, there's a developer who's interested in bringing a conference center here, and it says in the state plan that this area needs a conference center. It reinforces development more than it helps with marketing. But it can also help with marketing. It's not the way that Virginia Tourism tends to market outside of how they divide up their Virginia Travel Guide. So then we would be in a separate section of the Virginia Travel Guide as well.
There obviously was some press coverage over the last couple weeks on this. Did you hear anything, see anything? Is there any reason that this would be perceived negatively, I guess is my question?
I don't think so.
It doesn't seem like it.
I think maybe it's great that it was covered, but maybe there wasn't a lot else to cover that day. But so far in the localities where it's been brought up, it's passed. So there hasn't been any resistance. None of my counterparts are anticipating resistance to this. It seems like it's a good move for us. It's just making the case to the state. And we have a February 1st deadline to make that case to the state so that we can have the Virginia Travel Guide reflect that new region if that's what they choose to do.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. If not, I will entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
A motion to approve and authorize the chair to execute the resolution.
Motion to approve and authorize the chair to execute the resolution.
Second.
Sorry. Okay, my bad, my bad. I'm so much in trouble. Okay, so we did have a motion this
second. And a second.
Okay, mm-hmm. Do we need a roll call vote, Lauren?
No.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you. Okay, now we go into our presentation from Andy Bowman, Albemarle County, Assistant CFO. This you're going to love this. All about budget.
I'll do my best to bring the enthusiasm you request in. I have reference to Virginia Code. I'm also here to listen, to explain who I am. Some of you all have met, many of you all have not. Thank you, Supervisor Lepister, for the introduction. I am an assistant CFO with Albemarle County. Albemarle is the fiscal agent for the CACPD and one of the few localities with obviously the city of Charlottesville who's created the CACPD. We do a lot of things together with the city of Charlottesville regionally. This is one of those ways that we provide services, and thank you all for all of your all's public service on the governing board. I appreciate the time you were volunteering to this. So, I'm here today really to talk about all things related to the transient occupancy class. And so before we go into the tax, some of you all know this very intricately, others may not. Also, if there's someone listening today or in the future, I just want to make sure we're grounded in what is the transient occupancy tax, or TOT as I'll refer to it countlessly through this presentation. So this is a local tax that's enabled by the state, and it's really for any rooms and spaces rented out to guests for 30 days or less. The way this tax works is that if you are a customer or consumer, when you are as part of your bill, you're paying with the business, you pay that tax to the business. The business then turns around and provides that tax to the locality that they are you're located in. So if you're located in the city, that tax goes to the city. If you're located in the county, that tax goes to Albemarle. Right now, those rates are the same at 9%. So I'll just very high level 101, that's how that works. But I'm going to go now a little more into why am I here today, which is on the next slide. Thank you, Courtney. Really two things. The first is to get CACPB feedback from you all. So I'm going to go through some content, but the question really for you all is, what is the highest and best use as the county plans for transient occupancy taxes? A portion of that under state code is unrestricted. A portion of that is restricted. So it's really 3% restricted that I want to talk about and get you all's feedback today. So that's the question that's going to come back to you all at the end of the first half of my presentation. The second half, and I'll say this is if time allows, because I know I'm one topic of many today. I have also, just to clarify some questions I've asked, how does the funding formula work for the city and the county to provide funding to the CACPB? If we don't run out of time, and I'll look for Ms. Kikation to kind of give me a signal on that too, I can easily provide a memo of my presentation. In the meantime, I can answer questions. I can also come back to the next meeting if it would help you all to really walk through how this works, because there is some complexities to that, and so the math come later. I'm not going to go right into that, but also with that and the state code references, it is complex. So to elaborate a little more on consultation, this is the first reference of the state code. If you don't want to read through that, the summary is the main takeaway thing. Well, right now in Albemarle County, we have a 9% transient occupancy tax. 6% of that can be collected and spent on anything, eligible under state code. The remaining 3%, though, is restricted in its uses, and you can see these listed here really around travel and tourism in the locality. And so in Albemarle County, we also have a requirement and expectation that we are consulting with representatives of the industry, which we're seeking to do through the CACPB board. Now, I've gone back and I've looked through, and I would say that the county's collaboration on this has either been informal, or I should say less formal and less consistent than I would like to be. So I'm coming here. It's the first time we're going to do this. I'll be back next year. I'll be back the year after that, or whoever is serving my role will be. And we'll keep getting this better. But this is really a time for me to educate and inform what is the status quo, and then how do we get your all's feedback that we go into the budget process. This is a statement up here at the top where it's really consulted. The Board of Supervisors gets the final say, and because they are the ones who appropriate tax dollars. So we will take that into advisement as we prepare the county budget. Very important distinction I want to make is the City of Charlottesville is treated very differently under state code. There is no requirement for the have any designation in the City of Charlottesville for how those dollars be spent. There's also not a requirement for them to consult with the CACPB. So the fact that my counterparts in the city, who I work with all the time, are not here, it's not a reflection on them, it's a reflection on how the state code treating the city and the county very differently. Mm-hmm. So as we kind of build toward this feedback, I just want to let you all know how this fits into the process. Albemarle County is going to release a recommended budget to the Board of Supervisors on February 25th. And right now, staff is gathering, you know, requests from departments, from outside nonprofits and agencies, input from you all. We had a joint meeting with the school board and the Board of Supervisors just the other week. All of that is coming together to February 25th, when the county executive, who is appointed by the Board of Supervisors, will give a budget recommendation for them to consider. We will then see through March, Supervisor Lapisto and her colleagues will spend an extensive amount of time going through the budget in detail, having public hearings. This also will be town halls that are not listed on this time, concluding with the April budget being, the budget being adopted on April 22nd. That goes into effect July 1st, and then we do it all again next year. So this is just how today's input begins to fit into the budget calendar. So just really high level, the budget, not knowing that you all are familiar with the county budget, really where do the county's operating revenues come from, of which one is the transient occupancy tax. So three takeaways on this donut chart, and I apologize, these words were larger on my laptop, but three takeaways. The first, like many localities in Virginia, general property taxes are primarily the funding source of the county budget operations at about two-thirds. That's primarily real estate taxes and property taxes, which is vehicles, which you think of, from personal and businesses. The second takeaway that sometimes is surprised folks, but I mentioned, is state here in purple and federal revenue in slate blue is only 8% of the general operations. Now, that's a lot of dollars because it's still 8% of the $475 million operating budget. But a lot of those are really related to reimbursement programs from the Department of Social Services or other things that are designated. The third takeaway is the transient occupancy tax funding. This is in fiscal year 26. We estimate that'll be about $8 million for that 9% tax. And that really is one of the other categories of other local taxes, like sales, food and beverage, business licenses, and many others. So that's just half the equation of where the operating revenues come from. I'm going to move next to where the dollars go. And as we as staff are making recommendations to the Board of Supervisors, we're really grounding ourselves. How do we move forward the board's six strategic goals in the plan that they adopted in 2022? And all of those, actually 23 objectives across these six that lead to that. How do we make meaningful progress? Some take dollars, some take aligning resources, others take seeing through plans that we've already funded and seeing those through. But what that looks like in another donut chart, well, the next slide, is the expenditure side. So just like I did before, three quick takeaways, high level. Where do your tax dollars go? It is mostly to support education. I mean, I shouldn't say mostly because it's 44%, but it is the largest piece of the donut there. Second is public safety over here in the light green at 17%. And the CACB's funding of about $1.3 million, that's about 0.3% of the budget, and that shows up in this Parks and Recreation reporting category down here, as well as other services that are in there. So going over to the next slide, this is a snapshot of, I'll need to test my colors before I use the screen next time. How does that 9% get carved up and what its allocated uses are? So I'm going to take a moment, because this is the busiest slide I have today to talk through, of really taking this dollar and breaking out. Over here in light blue, we have those areas that are not restricted by state code. Over here in kind of these reddish, orange, yellowish shades, we have what is restricted by state code. So 6% unrestricted, 3% restricted. So on the unrestricted side, the Board of Supervisors has a funding policy that sets an expectation for how that would be divided among public school operations, county government operations, which includes everything from public safety to land use and zoning to human services, libraries, transit, jails, CACB, administrative operations, and more. And then we also have a portion that we put into the capital debt program for the construction of things like schools, firehouses, and so on. So that's the amount here. If you were looking at this dollar for the city of Charlottesville, it would be all blue. So on this 3%, how that's currently allocated right now is the CACVB is funded for the regional agreement. It's the very first thing we calculate, and I'll go into the second half about how the calculation works. And of that 9%, that's currently 17%. The other thing that we'll look at, it's very small over here, but the county does fund that color is terrible. Arts and festivals and culturals, for example, the Festival of the Book, Virginia Film Festival, other nonprofits who are bringing folks into the community, that is a use as well. The other thing is continuing to practice here for funding for the Parks and Recreation Department here, which is 16% of that total. Now, this is not funding things that are funded by services like the summer swim program at the beaches and lifeguards. It's not funding athletics and classes. or any of those other programs. The rationale, as I understand, going back through history, is that because the county is scenic beauty, because there are events at parks, because travelers from out of the area come to the parks, that was, has been seen as the eligible use of that expense. But that's one thing that we'll look at every year and getting your all's feedback on what that rate blend is. So this is one we can go back to if we need it, but here's that allocation of where that goes, the 6% unrestricted, and then where I really need the CACVV's input today is around that 3% in the best way for to strategize that in the future. So on the next slide, do you want to provide...
So just to clarify so that everybody understands, when you have the dotted line, everything that's to the right of the dotted line represents the 3% that is by state law should be attributed to the CACVV or the promotion of tourism in the region, right?
Yes, correct. You got it.
Okay. So right now, what's shocking is that it's really cut in half. Like, not even half. So out of that 3%, that you just described that should be used to fund promotion, to fund this, to fund Courtney's office, and the promotion of the region. 70, I mean, what is it? Half of it goes towards that goal, but the other half is split with park and recreation.
And there's also a little smaller portion of the arts and cultural festivals. They're very small to see there, but yes.
So why is that?
So it's really the county funds the CACVV based on the regional agreement with the city, where the county board of supervisors and the city council have set that to be 5% of the first five, or
30%
of the first five. would you like to give that presentation?
No, I'm just
Yep. So I'll go through that math in a little bit. And so to me, that's one where that is what it's based on. The county and the city in the future could change that, but that's where we are right now.
And this is kind of like a percentage, but do you have an actual dollar figure of what that should represent?
Yes, I do. If I can come back at the end when I pull some numbers, we'll get that. Yeah. So the next slide, before I kind of open it up and we go into the formula, is just sharing some perspective on how the CACVV's funding has changed over time. This is the last 10 years. I actually did a similar slide with the school board recently, just to get perspective on where we've been and where we're going. Because it's true that as we go, now that the county's fiscal year 25 audit is complete, because we're based on the prior 2 years' actuals, we can calculate what the CACVV's contribution would be in fiscal year 27, which is slightly down. But as you can see, this has been quite a roller coaster over the last 10 years. We have, even prior to the start of the pandemic, kind of relatively flat and declining revenues, and then we see the impact of the pandemic in fiscal years 22 through 4 of how that played out. So this has been the county's calculation that has really surged back there, and now we're seeing things level off here, just like we are in a lot of the overall economy. What's not shown in this slide, but I will point out, is because of the impact in the pandemic, the county received a significant amount of ARPA dollars, and those are footnoted here of what was provided to the CACVB. I know that CACVB also received designated dollars as well, but I'm not going to take credit for that because that's just the state said here, this is for your designated marketing organization. But these were decisions in terms of the board's balance about how to allocate the ARPA funding. So I just provide that for perspective and where we've been. So on the next slide,
so Andy,
yes.
Back to the last slide.
Yep.
So one could, just making sure I'm getting this right, and I've seen these slides before, y'all, so I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But so you're saying that FY23 and FY24 could almost shift up $276,000 and $435,000
if they're not in these dots. Yes, okay. If we were looking at total support, but the ongoing and out for the formula. That's where
that's
was.
The formula.
And that was a case where the county was really saying, given the unprecedented time we're in, it's appropriate to do something different, given that that tax was impacted most significantly and was probably one of the last taxes to come back as an impact of the pandemic. Yeah.
And just, Courtney, could you explain again the percentage of what, from the TOT, the percentage that goes to the CACVV?
I think Andy will do a better job of that in a few minutes, so I don't know that we want to go into that. But this is the same percentage that you're seeing for the entirety of the chart. We did receive additional ARPA funds, which you can see when we had those funds, increased revenues, which means that the increased revenues to the county as well, because we're getting a portion. We're getting that
30% of the first 5%, which Andy will go a little bit more into in a few minutes. I think it's easier to do with the charts in the background, but thanks for that.
And just another thing, like for year 24, when we see the growth, I think we should also let everybody know about that tax, that TOT tax was increased recently in both the city and the county.
It was, and so this is where the complexity comes in. The CACPB funding for the city and county is only based on the first 5% of the tax. So whether the tax is 5% or 9% or any other number, the contribution to the CACPB is the same.
So this means that the pot increased, but this is a consistent percentage for what we received throughout.
That's exactly what I wanted to point out.
Yes. Yeah, and to connect it back to the state code, that 3% is restricted. Anything above that 3% for the county is unrestricted. So. Yeah, I'll say your point is correct, though, that as overall those taxes increased, part of that was due to the rate. So the question really then, going back of just this high level kind of review of the budget, how the TOT and CACB fits in, is really, as the county consults with you all under state code, what are the highest and best uses and how we can apply that? And so this is one where we want to take a time from the getting the minutes of the meeting. We'll capture that. We're going to get that feedback. And I'm going to plan to come back every year and continue this dialogue of where that is. So I'll be happy to pause and open this conversation now, or I could also work through the funding formula if that's something people would be interested in.
Ask your questions.
I'm sorry, because this is really matters to promoting the area and to the work that we do here, but the work it does. And it is also something as the operator of a hotel and representing all the hotels in the city, but also the owner and operator of a restaurant that's very dear to me. So again, promoting the area is something that, again, we all here for. Looking at, and I do have a question, especially on the county's funding, but looking at that 3% that's allocated, and that should be by state law, distributed to the CACDB funding, we can see clearly that almost half of it is going to parks and recreation. So that is one question. I just kind of want to see, how is that money in park and recreation creating more a return on the hotels and the restaurants and the tourism? Mm. And secondfold, we've seen that, again, that tax is widely generated and created by the hospitality, the restaurants and the hotels. Mm. It's been increased recently, and you just pointed out in my previous question, that yet, as that tax has been increased, all of the revenue generated by that tax, which are paid by the travelers that come here, the additional revenues, none of it has been diverted back or being used to increase the funding of the CACDB.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of like my two questions.
Sure. So I'll take the second one first, because I've got some notes on that pretty handy. So I can speak, I can't speak for all the city's strategies, but I can speak to the county. So when the county went from 8% to 9%, that was in 2024. And that was a change that when the board approved that funding went in combination with a personal property rate change, it went to fund the following things. It provided some additional funding for public schools, for the capital program, but a lot of it was really devoted to public safety initiatives. There was a police officer that was added for patrol. There was also a police officer that was added to support temporary detention orders, which is really transporting folks in mental health crisis. There was also adding a 24/7 ambulance just up the road off Berkmar Drive for the highest volume of where that was. Mm-hmm. And also the board had received a request from North Garden Volunteer Fire Company, the southern end of the south central kind of area of the county. They are a volunteer station. They had an aging workforce. They were no longer able to run calls, and so they had requested supplemental staffing. And so this was really a strategy for the board to help diversify the tax base, putting less pressure on the residential tax base, knowing that out-of-town folks could. So I understand the point that you are making, but my intent is to educate in terms of what the board's rationale was in making those decisions. And I was going to back a little bit further. And it was 2022 when the county raised the rate from 5% to 8%. That changed right when, in 2020, when the county was given additional authority from the state to increase it. So when that happened, this was revenue diversification was very much on the board supervisors' mind, because they felt, looking across those six strategic goals, things they were looking to advance, and they were looking for how can we do that in a blend that doesn't only put it on the residential taxpayers, how do we get a broader level of support? Also, that was done to match the increase with the city, not to say match the increase, match the rates that were currently being charged at the city of Charlottesville. So that was some of the rationale that was done at that time. For the Parks and Recreation, I wouldn't mind taking that as a follow-up, but the general principle is that we know there are people who visit our parks from out of the areas. We know there are events that draw people in there. Certainly, that all of those do not overcharge, all those do not generate hotel stays, all those do not generate restaurant stays. In the same way that we don't use this to fully fund our parks. It only funds roughly about, I want to say about a third of our Parks and Recreation operation right now, and that's a number that if it got significantly higher, I think we would evaluate that too in terms of that right blend. But I can look and see what other specifics we have on that and take that as a follow-up.
Francois, I think you were thinking, and maybe I'm wrong, but why it went from us charging 8% to 9%, but that 1% has nothing to do with the CACVB formula. And then same thing, from 5% to 8%, has nothing to do with the CACVB formula.
No, I totally understand
okay,
that, right?
You got that.
3%
right.
Restricted,
okay.
Yes. I'm just worried about the mix, because that 3% restricted is basically split in half, mm-hmm. and almost mm-hmm. half of it goes towards parks and recreation. And in addition to that, you know, when it should be promoting the area, which one would argue that the more you promote the area, the more visitors and the more out of town, you know, like the more positive economic impact, therefore the more taxes collected mm-hmm. will be generated. And the other thing is, now that we continue to like raise, that we raised recently, you know, by 1%, which is a lot, right? Let's, for everybody in the public audience here, like, it's higher than the sales tax on many items, right? 9% is not insignificant. Now that we raise that even more, meaning that there is even more money generated by the TOT that can be allocated to general funding, why has the share that is the 3% that should be to promote the area, why hasn't that increased even further? Right? Because one could argue that you increase the tax, you also get more money that you can allocate that the county can allocate as they wish. Yet that share hasn't increased for the CACVB. Right? I'm just saying, if now there are more revenues, why don't we increase or change the formula to better promote the area and use the additional funds that are generated by the increase to fund now the, you know, like other areas.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that would take a change of the formula, which
yes.
would have to be approved by the Board of Supervisors.
Just to clarify, there's two different formulas that we're talking about, right? There's a 3% of the 9% is restricted,
right?
Of which
another formula,
1.5% of that 9%, i.e. half approximately of the 3%, is funding the CACVB.
Yes,
but
correct.
That 1.5% is currently calculated based on 30%
of the first
five percent.
Yes.
Right.
A few years ago. Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm trying to keep up.
Well said.
I've been in this room enough times that you would think I would know that. But that's the point you're saying is right.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
That number, the split of the 3% would change if the 30% of the first 5% formula was changed, right? Like, you don't have to change both. You change one, and it automatically changes the other, right?
Yeah, that's 16% isn't a fixed number, per se. Right?
Correct.
That's just reflecting, that's how it shook out, whatever year did this on.
Yeah, that formula, the where that line is in the red portion
correct.
Is defined by the 30% of the first 5%, right?
Yes.
Yes. But yes. The county could voluntarily change the other part. But the agreement says the 17% has to be there because that's what it says.
Right, that's what the agreement is now. And the county could go, I'm just being upfront with everybody, if we're having a problem with revenue and such, the county could actually go either way. So they could actually vote, the county could vote to go increase it or decrease it.
So the county could go against state law?
No, not the state law part.
So the, yeah, okay. The county can't change
the 3%.
However, I'm appreciating you picking this up. You got it. But the county could change it's a local decision on how much is funded to CACDV. Now, the county couldn't just, I'm not advocating they would do that, the county would just need to make sure whatever they would be replacing that funding with would be something that would support the intent of the state law.
Can I say something?
Please.
So I think that maybe where we're missing each other is for this piece right here. You may say Parks and Rec is not an adequate way to support tourism, and the Board of Supervisors is within their rights to disagree with you about that. Yeah. But the consultation piece is talking about it. You don't have to agree at the end of it.
Yeah.
But this is set by the formula that's in the Third Amended Agreement, which can only be changed by going back to the Board of Supervisors and City Council and getting them to agree on a new formula and a new agreement, which could move this line, or you could continue to consult and convince each other to come to some different line here voluntarily.
Correct.
Right? Okay. So, but that's the piece. This is just consultation. The law only requires consultation.
Thank
so
you.
So that's the piece I just want to say. They're not, nobody's violating the law, but the consultation piece is where you are allowed to disagree vociferously.
Yeah. In some communities, that whole dollar goes to tourism. I mean, we've said that out loud before. It's true.
Yeah.
I've not done that benchmarking, but if you could forward that to me, I'd be interested to review that.
It's North Carolina.
Yeah, Asheville.
All DMOs in North Carolina, the 100% of the TOT goes to the DMO.
What about surrounding areas, states?
I'd have to look closer.
Okay.
And I don't have.
But North Carolina does that.
North Carolina's the one off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think just knowing that in Virginia there's so many unique things about us, I'd be interested in the data if you all have that around the state and how we compare.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is actually going to lead to a question, so bear with me. But I also get the sense that you're here maybe looking for support, or maybe we're just trying to check a box today so that you can go back and say, CACDV is on board, let's roll. And to preface all this, I spent 20 some odd years of my career, I know it's hard to believe because I'm only 21, 20 some odd years of my career in county and city and parks and recreation, so I understand the struggles they have and the pain they have and funding streams are difficult. I get stuck on the restricted piece and why that would even be allowed to be shared elsewhere. If you came in today and said, we know for a fact the chunk that is going to Parks and Rec is going for all of our marketing, is going for all of our promotion, is going towards events, that I might be able to stomach that a little bit better. But you talked about beautification of some of the parks, which is very important, but I also know that that leads to facility maintenance and staffing for that types of things. So I don't feel confident that that's what you mean by saying beautification and it's strictly going for marketing and getting people to our region. If you're looking for a hurrah, let's move forward, it can't come from me. And that really pains me as the Parks and Rec, like Leslie Knope that I was for so long, but it just doesn't feel right. And like the multiple different, you explained it best, but holy cow, it's just like all over the place. And again, I think if the county came back and said, we're confident this chunk that we're taking from this restricted 3% is being used for X, Y, and Z, and maybe you can come back and explain that a little bit better with more detail. But that doesn't feel like that's what's happening. And so with that, I would hope that we could all pause a little bit and maybe push back and ask for more information, if anything.
Thank you. And so to me, that is helpful feedback. Because what I hear, and you can correct me, I'm going to overgeneralize here, but to have some support for Parks and Recreation is not objectionable in itself. Mm-hmm. But where does that specific support look like, and how does that tie into the state code? But I'll also clarify my role here is not to persuade you all of anything. My goal is to educate and inform, whether I'm here just like the Board of Supervisors, at the school board, or town hall, or if I ever appear before City Council or any of those. Just educate and inform is my goal. So whatever your all's feedback is your feedback. Also, complying with state code is one of my things I like to do. And so I want to get your all's feedback there. So it's one where if you all disagree everything we did, that'll be really clear, and it will be well known and documented as we go through the budget process. We'll communicate to that board. And, I can't guarantee, like anything in the budget, we'll turn on a dime and accommodate everyone's feedback. But we can take this time and every year get a little better through our entire budget process with where we get to.
Okay.
And I don't want to overstep because I'm not a director. You guys are directors, but I do craft arguments for a living. And I think what would be helpful for Andy in the consultation piece is he's taking your notes back to the county, right? Mm-hmm. And so am I correct that what I'm hearing is you would like as much of that additional 3% in your mind, the best and highest use is to spend it funding the CAC movie?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes. I would also challenge Andy and the rest of the team at the county, as with my Parks and Rec hat on, to say, you got to find better funding for Parks and Rec than to take a cut from this chunk of change to help fund them. Like, that's not making your parks better by taking a percentage of 30% of 5%. That's both. You guys have to do better than that.
Other feedback?
I just think it's a really good point about money going to parks and recreation marketing as opposed to other facility costs. I don't know what kind of coordination we do with Parks and Rec in terms of marketing.
We don't do a ton of coordinated effort with Parks and Rec on marketing, and again, speaking to the back of people said, sorry. We have sought to have a regional Parks and Rec map, one that would cover both the city and the county. That doesn't seem to be something that the localities are able to support at this time. And we collaborate a lot on the planning of things in the future, so through our destination development, specifically through Chris Rutter's work. But we, outside of directing people to parks kind of generally, and certainly when Shenandoah National Park was having challenges this fall, letting people know that there were other parks experiences that can be had, we don't have like a close promotional relationship with Parks and Recreation. Mm-hmm.
And we don't know who's utilizing our parks, do we? There's no gatekeeper.
There is not a headcount and kind of an address check out there beyond when we're collecting fees. But we certainly know anecdotally from the events that happened, from the folks who are in the park, there's a lot of evidence there are people there who are not county residents.
And I don't know if you know it or not, but we have the Blue Ridge Tunnel, that we're building a trail from the Blue Ridge Tunnel all the way to Charlottesville so people can actually walk that or, you know, on a bicycle, you know, ride that. But that's something big, and that's under Parks and Rec also, but that's something that's going to be really big that is going to bring out a lot of people also.
I will say that for Biscuit Run, though, we are trying to do more of a count of people coming. I haven't been out there myself, but there is a counter out there of how many people are coming in because the Charlottesville Area Mountain Bike Club is doing a lot of work out there right now. We raised about $75,000 or $80,000 to help fund the projects that we're doing at that park there. And so they are trying to do those counters to try to see how many people are coming and going mm-hmm. there.
And in the capturing the attendees, are we capturing zip codes? So that,
I don't know for sure. I mean, just bodies.
So it's all the bodies. All the parks have a gate counter. Yeah. So we can tell you how many cars came into the park. We can't tell you how many people were in those cars, and we can't tell you where those cars are from. We just know in and out how many cars.
We're just trying to tie the use with mm-hmm. are they our visitors? Mm-hmm. I mean, with, you know, bringing weddings to the area, they don't get a lot of time for it. But they do go to wineries, they do, you know, mm-hmm. track where our guests are going. Mm-hmm. And I just, we've never posted, or mm-hmm. did you go on a hike, or did you go to a park while you were
here? And in Parks and Rec's defense, it's not necessarily always their responsibility to attract travel and tourism. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's an added bonus.
Right.
But their job is to take care of our community members and the people that reside here, and that should be their priority first and foremost.
That was at 16%.
No, that's right. So,
but that's where I think your point about if those dollars are being spent on marketing those mm-hmm. assets, that's basically what we're doing here, right? Like we're marketing all of these assets to try to bring all of these
that's
people
right.
in to use them. I don't think it's a question of like, do we want those things or do we need to spend money on them? I think it's a question of like,
I would even argue I don't think Parks and Rec should be stuck doing that because they're building trails
right.
from the Blue Ridge Tunnel to Charlottesville. They got bigger things to do. But I think, and to say that a third of their budget isn't a lot, that's a lot of money for a Parks and Rec department. So if that can be used, if they weren't, it doesn't sound like they're forced to use it for marketing and promotion anyway at this point. But if they were, then that would even cut into their
right.
Okay. I mean, we're still trying to work Biscuit Run, that's the largest park in the county. Mm-hmm. And we're still working on getting amenities for that, which is going to take years. And, you know, little Free Bridge Lane, where we closed off a section of road so that it's all pedestrian, ties into Darnetown Park. In the first 6 months, we had over 4,000 people, you know, just going through that little tiny stretch of, what, a quarter of a mile of road and everything that's now tied to the to Darnetown. But parks are big because we're also replacing the grass and everything and updating things in the park. That goes, you know, that's all part of the tourism, the way I see it. But
well, I'm not sure I would have to rely on Chris and Emily to answer this question, but I think the other assumption is, like, if you were to flip that Parks and, like, it's not, we're not trying to take away dollars from Parks and Rec, but in theory, if the CACBB was using more of that 3%, that whole pie gets bigger, and so there's more dollars to go to all of those things, right? Like, that's the idea here, is we're trying to bring more dollars in from the outside so that that 9% represents more total dollars. So no one's actually having to cut their budget. Everybody's getting the same amount or more, assuming there's more dollars coming in, right? And the way to get more dollars in, I think, is through marketing.
Well, and the professionals should be doing what the professionals are good at. So the CACBB is here to market the region. They should get the funds to market the region in hopes that people will come here to utilize parks, rec, programs, events, hopefully spend the night, hopefully eat some restaurants, enjoy the wineries. That's, let's let the professionals be the professionals in each area. But if Parks and Rec has to spend X amount of dollars, and we're assuming they're spending that amount of money to market and whatnot, then they're not getting the opportunity to go out and be pros at
highly doubt they're spending a third of their budget on marketing.
That's right, they're not. There's no way.
Yeah,
We've also seen in 23 and 24, 22 and 23 that when with the federal subsidies, when the CACBB had a larger budget and was able to market at a wider scale on national platforms, but it certainly did have a very positive impact to the Charlottesville and the county, especially winning the wine region. So again, more funds for the CACBB allowing them to market this region, right, which is Charlottesville and the county, which is fantastic, will have bigger repercussions and will then increase the total tax, because more visitors, they'll stay places, they'll come back, they'll dine at restaurants and support the local economy. So that's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Other feedback? I want to make sure I hear from everyone who's got something to say. It's with the large board.
You got more than your bottom for today, huh?
Yeah. Other than a lot of that light orange going to the CACBB, heard on the no parks, yes, on more to CACBB. Are you sending Andy back with one message, which is as much of that as can go to CACBB should? Or is there an option B? Do you want to spend some of that money on public safety instead of parks? Like, that's, I think that's the consultation piece of the code. And so I just want to make sure that everybody feels sufficiently consulted. And we meet that piece of the state code today. Right? They hear what your number one priority is. Are you sending them with an option, one A?
I liked Chris's option where we mentioned that in Asheville, the entirety of that of the tax of the TOT goes there. So.
That you'd have to go to Richmond to change them. That's the scope of what I think the people are possible to do. But there are other things that local government does and serves. Is there anything else you are proposing in the alternate that would make the destination better or make tourism better? Or just also, we should take one message back, all to Courtney.
If I may add just a brief tackle to that, no one's jumped in. There is the various sliver piece of pies under $50,000 the county funds, things like the Festival of the Book. Does the board members, they have an opinion on that, or would that be viewed as something that would be better directed to the CACB as well?
It could be better directed to the CACB, in my opinion, because they would be the one promoting it and probably in a more effective way. Same thing with the Parks and Recreation. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Darcy, for saying that. It's not that I'm against park and recreation funding. It's quite the opposite. But I think that duplicating the efforts and saying, should that money allocated to parks and recreation was allocated to marketing option, I think that the CACDB would do it in a more efficient way, and especially send a better message.
Thank you. I'll clarify, not all of that for those nonprofit events or advertising, for example, the Festival of Local Do Educational Programming in Schools. That's not the mission of the CACDB, and so I don't know if they would make a different decision in support of that. So it's just, I say that not as a pro or con, but just how the different missions of nonprofits, county government, and the all the various services and the CACDB, how those all intersect.
Especially on this board, we're working on branding, right? And on having, like a marketing campaign that is, cohesive and that works for both, the city and the county and the area in general. I think that having more funds and having the funds that are allocated or should be allocated there would just help have a much bigger impact. Not just at the regional level, but on the national level.
Thank you. Well, in case anyone has any more feedback right now would like to speak, I'm about to do some math with you all, if that really motivates anyone to share an opinion. we'll go ahead. We can also come back at the end. It's really the second part of today is reviewing that calculation and how's that history played out. Because you all seen the roller coaster of CACB funding. So my intent is, again, to educate and inform. How does the current math work in the agreement? So on the next slide is the language of the agreement itself. Apologize for this color not popping on the screen like it did on mine, but it's exactly as Mr. Ull stated, 30% of TOT revenues collected in the most available fiscal year is capped at 5%, and it clarifies in the third clause that if the city or the county ever adopt a rate above 5%, then that is what is, the 5% is what is used. So I'm going to walk through piece by piece about how this gets calculated. I'm taking the data from the county. On the next slide, to start out very first, for Albemarle County, how does the calculation work? So I have here fiscal year 24 and 25, and what this is the amount of consumer revenue that was spent at businesses where the TOT tax was paid in fiscal year 24 and 25. So that was a little above $91 million fiscal year 24, and then that dipped slightly in fiscal year 25 at $90 million. So that's the takeaway. Overall consumer activity was slightly down. We saw that on the chart about how that before the CSUV was dipping after those years of surging increases. On the next slide, we go to this light kind of pinkish-purple shade. We can see down here the actual amount of TOT revenue in the county went up last year. And that is because the TOT rate increased from 8% to 9%. So although the tax base went down, the rate applied to that base went up. So instead of 7.3 collected, it went up to 8.1 million. So then, on the next piece of math, we'll get down here now with this kind of lightish blue-gray, because that language applies to the first 5% of the TOT. So we have to ask ourselves, okay, what is 1% of the tax? Let's take the amount collected and divide it by the rate, and we can see there were about $900,000 or so in each year. And then to get the 5%, we'll just take that amount and multiply it by 5, and we end up with about 4.6 and 4.5 million. So that gets us to this new step in the calculation where we take that number and we apply 30% to get the amount that will fund next year. And there's always a two-year lag because we just closed fiscal year 25. The county had its audit complete last week, and so that becomes the basis of fiscal year 27. Fiscal year 26 will become the basis of fiscal year 28, CAC funding, and so on. So the final step of the calculation is down here where we can see 30% of that number provided 1.37. Now we're at 1.36 rounding in fiscal year 27. So a question I understood that came up before is, well, what if the county didn't change its rate? How does that factor into it? And so I did a kind of a what-if scenario. Fiscal year 25 is exactly the same as you saw on the previous slide. But in fiscal year 25, what happened if the county kept a rate at 8% instead of 9 and everything else was equal? So in this case, the amount of consumer activity is the same, 90 million or so. The rate is now 8% instead of 9. So the amount collected would have been 7.3 million instead of 8.1. Now, the value of 1% of that tax, though, is unchanged because we're taking that number divided by 9 or that lower number and divided by 8. I guess this is the same number of 4.5 million times by 30%, and we get no change. So I ran through that really quick, but the main takeaway is because it's based on that first 5%, that is why it does not impact the rate change of 8 to 9 or the other rate in the future based on the way the agreement is currently written. And this is my last slide today. I'll be answering any questions. If anyone has other thoughts, that is.
Any questions?
Well, I just want to say that I talked with Sam once I kind of got on his board and got comfortable and tried to do my high calculus to understand that funding agreement. I talked with Sam. It's like, I just want to simplify it because it seems really complicated. And so I hope to do something, you know, and I know we couldn't do it in the silo, but it just seems really, I don't know, it seems really complicated to me. It doesn't seem to be other localities are doing that. It seemed like our staff is doing a lot with a little. And I think that, to me, someone who came in and we had a lot more resources for the ARPA funds, and we saw the increase, the impact that had. To me, it's like, okay, you know, we go out there and we promote this area in a wider range, more people will come here. And so when that money went away, the numbers went down. So it was a good way to test it out. And so I just think that, and I know it won't be easy on my board, you know, on the council, but I think that if we can show that, you know, we can use those funds to have more, not only for for this board, but for the city in general, for the shelter that we're fixing up, and for other services that we have for affordable housing, that the pot will be bigger for everyone. So anyway, that's one of the things that I'm talking with Sam that I would like to do.
I think there's two things, and Andy, I appreciate your explanation, but there's the clarification of how the formula works. I think we all agree it's a little clunky, and I think back when it was created, there was a reason for the first 5%, 30% thing. And it had to do with where the lines were drawn at the time. The county can only go up to 5%. You referenced that as well.
Yeah, city was above that.
The cities had a different permission set, so to speak. But that could be cleaner. Without changing the amount either the city or county gives, the formula could be cleaner. I've had other people walk through this and come up with a slightly different version of what you showed with it only applying to the first 5%. Maybe that's just a legal interpretation or how somebody interprets certain words, or maybe it's not, I don't know. But I think it could be cleaner regardless of whether we advocate for more or less funding. The second question is the more or less funding, which is the bigger question about do we collectively want to say 40% of the TOT or, you know, some other number or not. I think those are the kind of the two things. But I think even if we're held harmless, cleaning up the formula would be in all of our best interests so that we don't have to wrap our heads around this, you know, every year to figure out are we getting the right amount or not. Mm-hmm.
And how much is it of the state requires us to have a certain formula? How much is the counties and how much is the state requirement?
Would we have to go
back to the state?
Yeah, so there's two different distinctions. With the state, it's really the first thing to comply with is how the 3% is used. An requirement of the consultation. When it comes to the CACVB, that is entirely with the local discretion between the city and the county in terms of how that gets allocated.
Okay.
I mean, as long as they're being compliant with the
right.
state.
Right.
Right. But to be really straightforward, I think the obvious issue that I see as a board member is $1 million of additional tax revenue was collected, and none of that is going to the CACVB. Right.
That's correct.
Can you go back two slides just to make sure saw that correctly?
Yeah.
Can you go back one more? Right. Like that number went from 7.3 to 8.1 and did not obviously change the amount of CACVB budget.
That's correct. And that was because
of the, I understand the math. I'm saying that seems like the crux of the issue to me is like that number went up and moving forward, like that number could double and the budget still wouldn't change, right? Like, it's still, it would
well,
be...
Well, but it's more tied to the top line. Like, remember, revenues went down fiscal year 24 to fiscal year 25. So remember, like, if revenues had gone up in fiscal year 25, that percentage would have gone up. The percentage didn't go down because the tax rate increased. The percentage went down because the revenues collected decreased.
Right. My point is, if the rate changes to 10%, that is going to have no impact on the CACDB budget.
That would be up to the decision of City Council if it was their rate or the board supervisors. In the same way, when the board raised the rate, when the board raised the rate from 8 to 9, they deliberated what for the board at that time what was the highest and best use. They put that into the ambulance, the alternative mental health response team, the police officers, and some of those other things. It's just educating what the board's framework was at the time. At the risk, I speak for the board, but that was the discussion they held at that time.
Is there a way to calculate lift on marketing dollars? Like, is there like a break-even number for that? Like, every $1 million of marketing we spend generates this much more top-line revenue, et cetera?
Yes.
I
should
say yes.
Yes.
In theory, at least.
But yeah, I mean, we currently, if we had an additional $1 million, right, that would allow us to advertise in an opportunity markets like our direct flight markets like Chicago and Atlanta and New York, where we're not able to afford to do that right now. The luxury traveler is the traveler because a lot of the rest of us don't necessarily have the funds to do that. We don't have a marketing budget that allows for us to reach the luxury traveler. We would have, you know, we'd be able to do a lot more in sales. We don't currently, you know, give any incentives to people to bring group business here. So we have a lot of opportunity, and we could show what that opportunity might look like. But I mean, it's my belief that if we had $1 million, that we would be bringing back 7 times that to the economy.
Does that kind of math factor into the feedback that you provide when you go back to assemble all this?
Yeah, I think that would be. And it's one where right now, in the way the funding formula works, the CACV has kind of a built-in, and I understand this is kind of the logic when it was created, you know, many moons ago, of the more the CACV performs, the more return they get. So there is that kind of built-in incentive into how that funding has worked. But yeah, that can be shared in as part of the feedback with all of these things in the meeting. Other questions?
How alarming is it that it went down $1 million in revenue in the first place?
Courtney, would you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that some of that is, you know, the economy, right? Like, we had, we're starting to see a flattening of demand overall, but it's also, we don't have the larger budget that we did, and we're not having as much reach. It's not something. We were advertising nationally when we had ARPA funds, and we were just advertising within the 2 to 6 hour drive radius now.
And I would add to that that it went down while adding some room nights, right? While adding new hotels and additional rooms in the market. Even despite that
I think that is. I'd have to look exactly when the forum was added, because the forum is the one that's the most recent. Because this is just county. Remember, like, we're not talking about city revenues at all and what we're talking about today from these charts. But the forum, I'd have to remember exactly when that opened. But that's the 23rd. Thank you.
Yeah, they just celebrated 2 years.
Thank you. Time. I don't have time anymore.
And I'll invite anyone, if your teams or you all look at this, you have the slides, more questions, to Mr. Engel's point. If there are people who feel this is not being calculated correctly or have questions, please, let's sit down, let's talk this through, let's engage that. This is something we do every year with our counterparts in the city staff. We do this with our attorney's office and make sure we're following that too. And so I'd be glad that we'd be transparent, educate, and inform is my goal. So but please let me know.
I'm just going to mention, I think the decrease in funding for this year is what, about 18,000 in that area?
I'll get back to the previous slide. It's in that ballpark.
Whereas when we had the ARPA funds, we're able to do a lot more. So really, we're asking for a lot more funding in order to be able to go to these other markets. Is that correct?
Yes. I was asked what we would do with $1 million more, and that was my response.
I can tell you what I do with $1 million more. that would be great. I think everyone already knows this, but we're in a precarious financial time because we don't even know yet. Am I correct? We don't know what the feds or states are going to be giving us.
We're watching that regularly. We know that we're impacted by the federal government some, and that I'm sure just like in the city, they're on that watch as well. And the governor will have the draft budget. Of course, he's the outgoing governor that'll come out very soon, and we'll have a new General Assembly, and that'll work through as well. But you're right, this time of year, we do have uncertainty in where those things go.
And we're all aware of that. I think in the not too distant future, in a couple of years, things are going to be happening in the county that will give us additional revenues and everything. So whatever the board wants to do, that's fine. But I mean, that's the reality of the situation. Because we do have that flexibility, the county has that, I don't want anyone on the board to say, oh, well, we can use that extra money, and say CVB doesn't really need it, and we can use that extra money, and we can use it over here for affordable housing, for public safety, something like that. Whether or not that would happen, I don't know. I'm just laying it out to all of you, the thinking, because we have the whole county to consider. And hopefully not raising taxes or anything. Whatever you all want to do or ask, we're in dismal times, and I think it'll get better, hopefully. Well, I know it'll get better in 3 years, but anyway. With AstraZeneca, of course, is what I meant.
Andy was given some questions about the Parks and Rec money that he's prepared to go back and get the follow-up and answer. What form do you want that return information to come back to this board in? Would you like Andy to come back to a subsequent meeting?
I don't know if Andy's going to want to come back. He said year after year, but I think he's just...
How do you want that information to come back to you as board so that you get what you need?
And the one easy button, if I were just provide a member to Courtney, and she can distribute it to the board as well. Okay. Now, I know you'll have a lot to cover in your meetings, and maybe you don't want to spend it all with me. I don't know. But I'm also glad to come back. So.
I have a question for Chris. Is your entire TOT, does that go to the CECVB?
No. No, it goes by formula.
Pardon?
It goes by the same formula.
The same formula? I thought the city's was different.
30%, the 30% of the first 5%. But then their entire above that is unrestricted.
Unrestricted.
Which is why they don't have a 30%, 6%, one-third, two-thirds.
Their dollar would look different.
Okay. Got it. It just goes into the general fund.
Got it. Okay. Well, board? Right. This is information only, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm going to take this feedback in a minute. I got my follow-ups, and I meet with Courtney on a regular basis, so to be continued. So.
Okay. Let's wait, guys.
Thank you very much, Andy. Thank you. Next, we have director's report. Courtney?
Great. Hey, Carla. Get to be in the presentation today.
Yay.
We weren't sure how much discussion might be occurring, so we wanted to make sure that we have plenty of time. I'm going to still ask if you can do an abbreviated version of your update on the 250th, but I am officially the local committee representative of the Virginia 250th for Scottsdale, Albemarle, and Charlottesville, but I have designated all of the work to Carla, so I'm just the figurehead, so Carla's going to talk about it.
Jump to the next slide. So everybody received these slides, so you can look over them. If you have any questions, you can direct them to Courtney, and then she can direct them to me. But I just wanted to give a quick overview of what is VA 250. And that is the statewide commission that is leading commemorative efforts of the 250th anniversary of American independence. Okay. And it really is, VA 250 is a brand of that commission. The full commission has like five names or whatever. And how did CACDB get involved? As Courtney said, resolutions were passed by the town of Scottsville, the city of Charlottesville, and the county of Albemarle, and I think in that order, asking the CACDB to lead these efforts for our community. And this came about because the state had asked each of the localities to create a local committee. And as you know, we do things collectively here in a lot of different ways, and so this is something that was a combined effort. Why do we, the CACDB, support this work? Like, how does this fit? It totally aligns with our destination development initiatives, right? History, heritage, things to do. These are all assets that we already have within our destination, and our master tourism plan identified them as areas of growth. And we can build into that things like our culinary and wine scene and tell that historic story and how it also continues to influence our culture today, right? So it all ties in. What are the statewide priorities and opportunities? It's really about engaging people with history, especially lesser known history. And all of this is to increase civic participation, right? That's at the state level. That's what their goals are. And then commemorative partners, they're like trying to engage people through commemorative partnerships, marketing exhibits. And then what have we accomplished so far? We're going to skip to some of those slides. If you want to skip through. So can we just go back really quickly? So the A250 at the state level is a program of the General Assembly. That's how it gets its funding. And I think really here at the CACDB, what we are looking at is like opportunities through VA250 to then amplify our stories and to showcase what's going on in our destination. And so there's a lot of ways to do that. There's a VA250 website. There are exhibits that are traveling through VA250, specifically the Mobile Museum, which came last summer to Highland. There's marketing and public relations, including a partnership with Cardinal News. There's funding opportunities. And there's just general support. They've held annual conferences. They hold monthly office meetings so that the local committees can ask for, we can share information. We can be like, how can we get this done, right? Next slide. We'll go ahead and skip this. Okay, so what has the CACDB accomplished so far? And so I came on board with the committee just 2 years ago. And so in the 2 years, we have convened a local committee. We are really into more is more. So our local committee has about 100 individuals on it from about 25 different organizations, right? If you want to be a part of it, just let me know. So we can convene local committees, and we're always providing guidance to partners, like how can I get involved, right? I attend the statewide meetings, the office hours, and I'm often connecting local partners directly with the state commission. And so I might just introduce them and be like, hey, I'm pitching this story, right? Athena and I have had one-on-one meetings about the commemorative partnership meeting with state staff, right? Be like, hey, let's brainstorm ideas. We have been awarded a VTC, VA250 Marketing Leverage Program grant, and that has funded the Founding Footprints project. We continue to provide letters of support for other partners' applications. I was thinking about this, so the grant that we applied for was $10,000, and I think otherwise we've helped bring in another about $12,500 to the community through the A250 grant. We helped secure the Mobile Museum for 2025, and we've encouraged local applications for 2026. Announcement of these dates has been delayed at the state level, but I'm hoping it will come to the Charlottesville area twice in 2026. And we are in the process of producing founding footprints. Go ahead and skip this. I will just touch on the Mobile Museum. I know a lot of you have seen it. So here it was when it was at Highland. It was here during the Albemarle County Fair. We had 625 attendees, including two county supervisors, the city mayor, thank you, and our congressman, John McGuire. We had coverage by CBS 19 and NBC 29. We have, I know of three applications for the Mobile Museum for 2026, and I'm hoping that two will come through. It's not a small thing to host this museum, right? You need a large, flat outdoor space. You need the approval of the locality if you're not a state agency. That's what makes it nice for Highland, right? They are, because they're part of William & Mary, they're considered a state agency. Monticello is not, right? You also need over $2 million in liability insurance. So it's no small thing to bring it here, right? There are other pop-up traveling exhibits that are coming to the area. Today's the last day that Highland is hosting the Give Me Liberty exhibit, and then in about a month it'll be going to JMRL. Right? Next slide. And then I hope you all know about Founding Footprints. If you're not listening, please do. The last episode will air later this week, and it's about Monticello. There have been 10 episodes so far, and this project has really been about building partnerships. So the interviews were with some of the major history organizations in the area, or history topics. And then within the itineraries that we're producing, we're able to showcase many more partners. So 10 episodes, 9 episodes so far, 10th one will air on Friday morning in time for the holiday travel weekend. People can listen in their cars. And we have 5 itineraries so far, and that's included over 140 partners have been featured in those itineraries. Just a lot of partnerships. And I think that's it. And we can go through this. Next slide. So how to move forward. We're planning on doing much of what we're doing right now to continue to highlight these lesser known stories, to continue to take advantage of opportunities through VA 250. Monticello is definitely taking the lead on not just local programming, but at the national level, right? And so we're lucky to have a partner like that. And then locally, the Albemarle Charlottesville Historical Society has taken the lead on a local grant application. So once again, a really collaborative effort, and fingers crossed that they will receive funding. And then next slide. So how can you help? Please encourage our partners to share their stories and projects with CACVB. We don't always know what folks are thinking about, or if they're thinking about doing something but they're not quite sure what to do or what opportunities are there, just connect them. We do have a specific email address for that. Please stay informed yourself. You can check out our online resources. A visitor-focused VA250 page will go live later this week on the Visit Charlottesville website. You are welcome to attend one of our local committee meetings. They are virtual. You can sign up for the statewide newsletter. And then I just ask, you know, get excited, right? Find your own passion in this moment, right? It doesn't have to be about the Revolutionary War, right? It can be about your personal story. Your family stories, right? Please follow Founding Footprints, participate in programming that is happening in our area, attend events, and remember that 2026 is just the beginning. Right? We are headed into a commemorative decade, right? So not just the signing of the Declaration of Independence, we have the founding of the government, we have the end of the war, we have the Constitution, right? These are all major 250th anniversaries that are coming up that are going to define not just this moment, but the young people's civic engagement for the rest of their lives.
Right? And since Monticello isn't here today, they see this as the next 15 years and have been talking about that way with their strategic plan that they just unveiled. Last month?
Last month, yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. So. Did they decide it on your volunteer website?
They do. Yeah, it's
they had an event called Climb the Mountain where people were invited to actually climb the whole Saunders Trail, and then the plan was launched there. It was fun.
To that point, the committee that was set up for this and funded, is it going to live for 15 years or is it sunset?
So you mean locally or statewide?
Statewide.
They are funded through 2032. So basically, and I don't think that will change dramatically with the new administration, right? They were started in 2020, so that's how long they've been going already. The Mobile Museum is funded through 2027. They actually just created a second one to give it more, just more flexibility in getting around the state. But they're hoping to run it through 2031. Virginia sees themselves as a leader within the nation in terms of commemorating American independence, right? And obviously a lot of stuff happened here. So, yes.
Any other questions?
Yeah, is there, like, if there's, like, keystone events, so the Mobile Museum comes or Monticello is doing something, or is there, like, an effort with that local committee to sort of say, okay, you know, this group is doing this big thing, it would be a good idea if other people did things in and around. Is that the work that the local committee is doing? Or?
Yeah, it's funny because I think... Yes, we would love to kind of spread out the events and not compete with some of the bigger ones or fill in, you know, weekends, obviously, like February, March.
Yeah.
You know, it's great. And then again in November, December is great and across the summer. I do have to say for July 4th, there's going to be a huge amount of competition in other major cities. Mm-hmm. Monticello is going to have, it's going to be a state designated, you know, site of importance mm-hmm. that day for the naturalization ceremony. Did that answer your question?
A little bit. I think I was thinking like if Monticello or again, anybody else, if Highland gets the museum again in August, you know, is there going to be like do other local partners say, oh, like that's happening in August, but this weekend, you know, we should do something that weekend also.
We always encourage that. Yeah, we do always encourage that.
That's great.
And the other thing I will say is that one of the expectations of the Mobile Museum is to have it staffed with volunteers and not everybody, so like Highland mm-hmm. doesn't have a large staff.
Mm.
So that's another way to engage the local committee to be like, hey, can you help out in mm-hmm. this way? Or mm-hmm. anyone here if they wanted to help out.
Yeah. And you've really done a great job of encouraging people to be aware of July 5th as an area of opportunity for, that's not currently programmed. We have the city events to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Downtown Mall on July 3rd. We have Monticello on July 4th. July 5th is the Sunday. What else do we have for that weekend? Mm-hmm. And trying to encourage people to do something on that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a hope that we would get the Mobile Museum during Founders Day weekend this spring. And so that's a that partnership with downtown and Monticello and then try to build out from there. But with the delay from the Commonwealth on whether or not that's going to actually happen, it makes it harder for us to encourage people to program events around it.
There is already, for Founders Day, a lot of collaborative events happening, and so just tying in, Monticello is hoping to bring it to the Downtown Mall for that time, and so that would kind of like just wrap it all up mm-hmm. very nicely. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Anna's
a
clapper.
Okay, next week. Director's report, that was it?
It is not it. No. However, I have too much to present. And so I wanted, I know we have a member of the public who'd like to make public comment. So I will go through the highlights really quickly, and I'll take any questions that any of you would have from, I know that you all reviewed this in great detail ahead of the meeting, so I will rely on that. But we've had a busy couple of months. I had a really great meeting with Monticello a couple of weeks ago to discuss how we can work closer together and work on messaging. And Jen Lyon is under the weather today, but we'll speak to that in the future. I have met with board member candidates for this board, to be specific. And so we will have some new folks who are joining in February, and want to recognize Jip and Amber for their contributions to this board. So thank you guys for everything that you all have done. And I look forward to seeing what the new crew has to offer. We toured the Virginia Guest House with a hard hat tour last week, which was a lot of fun. We're really excited about that property coming online. We've done, I think most of the stuff with the state is not worth noting at this point in time. And we've also been working really closely with the localities on a number of different projects, and a lot of them are very different from each other. But it's been great. The Regional Arts Council conversation isn't necessarily to create an arts council, but is around the possibility of what that might look like and what role tourism would play in that. So that's been an interesting conversation. And I will have more data to present to the board about my midweek business analysis, depending on what else is going on my schedule in any given week. I give this a lot of time, or not as much. But I should have more to share with you all come February or April's meetings. And coming soon, as I said, we'll have some new folks in February. I don't know to what extent we'll have new folks in February, so we'll see who's here. We'll have our Tourism for All conference registration opens what day, guys?
It'll open with the December newsletter.
Great.
December the 17th.
Great, thank you. So please join us for our conference. I am working towards our accreditation as well, so I'll be meeting with our county IT department, because that is part of what I need some assistance with. We'll have some crisis communications. Our plan is in draft form, and Jen Lyon and Athena have graciously volunteered to look that over, so thank you. I forgot to say that Juan Diego gave me some feedback on board orientation and trying to figure out how we can do a better job of making sure that everybody on the board has access to the same information and can have more confidence in participation. I don't think that we have a lack of participation on this board during meetings especially, but want to make sure that you all have a similar frame of reference. And feel confident in knowing what you can ahead of time. So we'll revisit some of that at the February board meeting as well. And want to give a shout out to the men's NCAA, can never say it in the right order, lacrosse country championship will be here in May, and hope to have that be a really great event for the whole region. With 10 minutes, is there anything specific that you all would like me to dive into on strategic plan process or anything else that I had in the director's report?
Just wanted, this is our first presentation with the new branding, the new logo.
Yes. Yeah.
This, it looks wonderful. Thank you. Great. Congratulations. Yeah. Everybody.
Thank you. And thank you all for getting us there. And we'll do our official rollout of the new brand at the Tourism for All conference. So we hope to have some more promotional items and things like that, and our website and some other things that take a little bit more time than a PowerPoint presentation.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Any other questions from the board for Courtney? Okay, next we have public comment.
Yeah. Well, that's me. We teed it up with a talk about parks and income. So I want to talk to you about something that I've been working on, and let me grab one. I'll grab that and give it up. Mm-hmm. Many of you know the Shenandoah National Park. If you've gone up to the national park, this is the only thing that basically you could get. And the CACBB, like all DMOs, could not really promote the whole idea of the national park as a destination, because the national park has really two things it does. It preserves and educates. Marketing and promotion is not part of their charge. And we, and I say we as a collectively, 9 DMOs that surround, let me just grab that since you got it open. Mm-hmm. 9 DMOs, now I'm just keep giving it. So 9 DMOs that surround the national park have kind of banded together into a start where we're promoting small villages and towns that surround the national park. The goal is pretty big because, just give you an idea, the Smoky Mountain National Park attracts 15.5 million visitors a year. The Shenandoah National Park has 1.5 million. And you can think about how many people that live within a drive time or could make this an area. So right now, this is just the start. I think the DMOs are all excited. It's really the first time that the Shenandoah Valley and the eastern side of the Blue Ridge have kind of worked together and taking it statewide and really starting to promote the whole idea about visiting the Shenandoah National Park. But more than just the park, the small towns, the special villages, the natural beauty that surrounds the Shenandoah National Park. And it's listed there. The Shenandoah National Park Trust is a partner in the whole program. I'm kind of the facilitator to make it, get it started and kind of put it together. And there'll be a lot more in the future. And we're excited that it was able to come together. So, got one more? Everybody got one? Mm-hmm. You'll be visiting the Shenandoah National Park soon after reading this. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate the information and really appreciate the maps, and hopefully we'll continue working together. Okay. We have board announcements. Anybody?
Closing weekend.
Okay.
Living Idea House.
Oh yeah, on the 21st, right?
21st, last day.
How many people?
Close to 14,000. Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
And the majority were a lot of day trips, a lot of return whole 29 quarter, quite a few routes. I mean, the whole map is full from all 50 states and lots of people floating out in the Atlantic Ocean that came from Europe.
Okay, great. Anything else? Okay, we want to thank Andrea and Jip. Thank you very much because it's your last meeting. And we're going to miss you, but you're going to keep in touch, I hope. And with that, we stand adjourned until February.
Duh.
I know. That's right. I don't have my calendar.
Still February.
In February. Do we? Anyone?
It's not on your calendar yet. It's the 23rd. It's the fourth Monday.
Okay, fourth Monday, 23rd.
And just to note for that, at the February meeting is where we set our meeting schedule. So if you don't like when we're meeting right now, or if it's not convenient, or if the mayor has to leave, we may want to consider if we want to change that timing for the future. We did move it back an hour last year. It had been 2 to 4. We moved it to 1 to 3 so that we weren't competing with city council meetings. But this meeting every year is on the third Monday of the month instead of the fourth because of the holiday. So just as a reminder, you can think about that and any other rules or procedures that you'd like that will be a conversation in February.
And could we also designate a couple maybe virtual meetings if that's what the board wants?
There are rules around it, right. I don't recall, but it is an option. I can't remember if it's an option for...
Yeah.
I wouldn't pre-designate your virtual meetings. Okay. I would wait to pull that card until you need it, because you can only do a certain percentage
right.
of the year. So
right. 25%.
I'd wait to get through bad weather before you decide to call that.
Okay, with that we stand, I will say, Happy Holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, everything. Happy New Year. Don't get too drunk. Anyway, we hope that everyone has happy and safe holidays. Thank you.
Stand here.